This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today we're devoting the hour to the music industry in Canada with a fabulous jazz artist, Sean Jones, coming up later on in the show. And first up, an amazing individual, Dr. Amara Pope, who's an educator, marketing genius, and an artist who helps champion representation in the Canadian music industry. Let me tell you a little more. With over a decade of experience in marketing, brand management, and digital media across several industries, Dr. Amara Pope also holds a PhD in media studies from Western University. Congratulations. Her PhD research is fascinating. It's focused on the intersections of media, culture, and race, particularly within popular music and digital media. Dr. Pope also earned a master's in communication studies from Wilfrid Laurier University and completed a joint honors bachelor's degree in rhetoric and professional writing and fine arts with a digital media specialization from the University of Waterloo. She is dedicated to amplifying underrepresented voices in Canada and fostering diversity, which is beautifully exemplified in her TEDx talk. She has delivered impactful lectures at prestigious universities, such as the University of Southern California and more. She's also spoken at conferences and served as a guest panelist all across Canada, and her insights have been featured in notable media outlets, including CTV, CBC, iHeartRadio, Global Television, NBC, and others. When not immersed in her professional pursuits, Dr. Pope enjoys weightlifting and experimenting with oil, acrylic, and mixed media painting. Dr. Amara Pope, welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Thank you so much for that introduction.
Dr. Pope, it's great to have you here. And I just found it fascinating in putting this interview together because you're an academic and you're also an artist. You're a PhD graduate who has also spent 10 years in marketing, paving the way for minority women to be represented in the arts. You're an educator, teaching internationally and locally in Canada, USA, Trinidad and Tobago. You're a speaker, and you're also the creator of an incredible TEDx talk, which we'll get to in a moment. I quite loved it. I'm wondering what inspired and motivated you to study R&B music in Canada. I know you talk a lot about how your experiences growing up as a young girl were the spark for your passion for advocating for diversity and visibility in the Canadian music industry. But can you tell us a little bit more about what it was like growing up in a small town in Ontario, as you describe it as one of the only brown families in your community, and how those conversations became the catalyst for your mission today?
Yes, definitely. So I was actually born in Scarborough, Ontario, where I was surrounded by a lot of diversity. My parents are immigrants from Trinidad and Tobago, but I was born in Canada. And in Scarborough, GTA, Toronto area, we have so many other Caribbean immigrants, as well as immigrants from all across the world. So that was a really great experience for me. But then when I moved to Elmira, Ontario, when I was about in grade two, I was surrounded by predominantly white communities. So we were the only brown family in a corner house. Nobody looked like my younger brother or I in school, in church, walking down the street. We were visibly very different and then culturally very different. So the food that my parents cooked at home, people weren't familiar with doubles, roti, and
your lunches, right? Your lunchbox, probably looked very different, right?
Yeah, and smelled, you know, very different in the classrooms. Yeah. It was great, though. I got to do a lot of trades in my elementary school. I'll give you this for this. But it was a great opportunity for me to just educate people around me what my culture was like. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize when I was so young, about 10, 11 years old, how that would translate into me being an advocate for diversity in industry as well as in academia. So that's kind of where it was sparking from.
That's so incredible. So I know we're talking about grade two till grade eight, and then things started to change, but I want to actually fast forward to your master's. And I found it fascinating that you decided to focus on Drake in your master's dissertation, and by extension later on in your TED talk. And I know your PhD dissertation expanded even more to include other artists such as Justin Bieber and Jessie Reyez as well. Can you explain why initially you felt so personally connected to Drake's story?
Mm-hmm. Well, as a 90s kid, I grew up with kind of his rise in stardom on Degrassi, yes, and then transitioning into the music industry. And so I liked him as an actor, but didn't realize he actually was a musician. And later on, when I heard his music finally on the radio stations, I heard him in a way break through a lot of media barriers to create and represent music that I love to listen to at home on my MP3 players, back in the day MP3 players, but and CDs, but I never actually heard it on broadcast radio or saw much of it on broadcast television. So I saw him finally being able to represent a genre of music that I loved and listened to so passionately. And that was why I was really interested in his rise, in the rise of his career, and looking at all the advocates before him that helped pave the way for him to be able to do that. But also in particular, looking at how Drake represented so many different communities, a Jewish community, Black Americans, Black Canadians. He has Christian roots from his mother. Yes. So it's just, he represented so much diversity and so many different scenarios in his music videos. And that's what made me really passionate about studying him just as a Canadian, but also as this diverse biracial artist in general.
And that must have spoken to you because you had a sort of a similar background, you know, in many different ways you could relate to that. Has he, I was so curious as I was watching the TED Talk and watching all of it, has he reached out to you? Because if not, I want to send this to him.
And no, he hasn't.
Not yet. We've got to make that happen. Let's talk a little bit about the TED Talk, and congratulations. I have to say, I know you're a little bit older now than when you did it. You were 23 years old when you did the TED Talk. It's really excellent. Can you tell us how your TED Talk came about and how that experience affected the trajectory of your career?
Yeah, so I was very young at 23 years old. I had already started my PhD in media studies, had my bachelor's degree, my master's degree under my belt, and I had just moved to Vancouver from Ontario, where I was pursuing just kind of my industry career. So I was an account manager, and then I was a communications coordinator. So I was just kind of starting my full-time work-life experience,
yes,
as well as finishing up my PhD at that time.
Wow.
Starting my PhD. I didn't realize it was going to take me 7 years, but I was beginning that at that point. I'd finished all my coursework, so I was able to work and study abroad at that point. And as I was developing my thesis dissertation, I was also speaking at conferences across Canada to discuss my research and my studies. And what I didn't realize was a paper that I did from my master's degree, so the degree before that I was, it wasn't my current research, I had presented at different conferences and caught the eye of different media outlets. Yes. So I was published in Toronto Star, Daily Hive, Vice, a few different media outlets, specifically in Canada as well. And it caught the attention of then a TEDx organizer who reached out to me just by email. And that's how that actually came to fruition. And that actually happened in Ontario. So living in Vancouver, it was a great opportunity for me to also visit my parents at home, see my school again while I was working on my PhD. It just, all the stars aligned in ways that I could have never expected.
It was so well written. Like, I don't know if you read the book on TEDx Talks. You know, there's a book all about how to write a TEDx Talk. It was so, the way you grab people from the beginning by asking questions, saying, where do you see yourself in terms of your diversity? And your just the way you really drew people in to the talk. Was that an easy thing to put together because of the master's thesis and all the other work you were doing? Or was it a real sort of dedicated time? How do I turn all of this academia into something that's relatable? Because it is so relatable and fascinating.
And I appreciate you saying that, because a huge part of my academic career was making it translatable to pop culture and just everyday communications. I find that things that stay in the ivory tower tend to not be able to grasp everyday, you know, communities and everyday people that are outside of the academic world. So that was one thing that was a huge driver for me. So I'm really glad you said that. And in terms of crafting the TEDx talk, I've loved public speaking ever since I was really little. In my high school experience, I did the International Baccalaureate program, and awesome. That was at Cameron Heights. So that kind of enabled me to start presenting at a very young age. It was very heavily prevalent in the presentation realm in the high school diploma that I did. So I was exposed to it at a young age, but I didn't actually read any books. I watched a few TEDx talks, obviously, beforehand, but just tried to put it together. And I tried to write and present in a way that I would just talk to somebody beside me, because I feel like that's a really great way to have that conversational approach.
Smart.
That's the, what I take into every presentation that I do.
Your parents must have been so, I have a daughter who's around your age, so I really can relate to this in such a big way. They must have been so proud of you.
They got to sit like front row with me, and having that experience with them and my younger brother and my best friend, it was
Wow. It
was amazing. And now my sister-in-law, she was my brother's girlfriend at the time. So just having to have that as a family moment, that meant more to me than anything.
Wow. I love it. I just love that. Let me just ask you, how do you think that TEDx talk at 23 years old impacted your whole career? Because I think it did.
Definitely. I think that was an experience where there was over 4,000 people in the live crowd, actually. So that was people in front of me, and it was live streamed because we did it at the Kitchener Auditorium. I'd never expected that. And I will say one other thing. When I went up on stage, they told me that the lights will be up so bright that you won't see the audience. What they didn't tell me was that if you're not doing a PowerPoint presentation, the lights are dimmed and you can see everybody.
Oh, no.
So when I went up on stage, I was expecting to see no faces, and I saw every individual face.
Oh, dear.
And that, it took me a second. My sound actually didn't work for the first like 20 seconds. I actually had to edit it. And that was like a jump start. And when I got through the whole thing, I will say it gave me confidence in a way that I don't think I could have ever had. Now
yes.
I'm not afraid to kind of go up in front of anybody after that. So
Absolutely. You
need these hiccups, I think, to build your confidence. And hiccups are a great way to just overcome anything. You know, you realize if I could do that, I can do it when things
100%, work well.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. I'm also a life coach. So it's so true. Like, I'm so glad for people to hear this, that when you do those things that really require you to step outside of your comfort zone and really take a deep breath and jump kind of thing and take that risk, mm-hmm. and you do it, you realize after that everything is easy after that, right? So you set
Definitely.
Yourself up so beautifully. How would you describe, based on your doctoral research, how Canadians are redefining R&B? And I just want to explain this a little more, that's really, and I'd love you just to tell us a little bit about your doctoral research. Can you paint us a picture of what R&B looks like in Canada? And how have Canadians redefined R&B, a mixture of pop, R&B, and hip hop?
Well, I did 400 pages on this, so I can talk forever about it.
400
that was the PhD
pages.
Dissertation. Yes, but in a brief synopsis, R&B was traditionally associated with Black America. It has deep roots in Black America. It still does have those roots. But when Canadians began to participate in the space, we had a lot of immigrants in Canada from different spaces, particularly in the Caribbean. So they brought their cultural style, their sounds, and their visible faces of different identities mm-hmm. into the mix of what Canadian R&B is. And I think today it's exemplified in artists like Jesse Reyes, Justin Bieber, Drake, very different racial identities.
Yes.
All three Canadian, and all three are mixing what is traditionally pop, hip hop, and R&B music. The Weeknd also representing a very different sound and style, but all equal participants in the space. So what I kind of advocate for at the end of the dissertation is lots of artists before those three that I mentioned, Drake, Bieber, Reyes, those were the main artists I studied. Before them came so many artists that helped pave the way to get them to where they are today. Mm. And through social media and through the internet, many Canadian R&B artists are finally getting recognition, whereas there were so many that came before them too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that when I talk about Canadian R&B, I cannot disregard the history of many Canadians and US artists working together to create that sonic sound and style, and looking at how those identities are so diverse in Canada today.
Why is this topic so passionate for you? What, because, you know, you, when you're doing a thesis, it's so funny. I remember this was actually my undergraduate thesis before my master's. I remember doing a thesis about the Montreal Children's Theatre, where I had studied acting as a young girl. And I based it on Dorothy Davis and Violet Walters, the owners and directors of this beautiful children's theatre, performing children's theatre for children, by children. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. So it was so easy to write this and to get behind it. And so I'm wondering what made you so passionate about this, because 400 pages, this is a doctorate thesis, not an undergrad thesis. This is big, heavy, this is, you know, heady stuff.
Yeah.
What attracted you to this and made you so driven to do this?
Well, I was initially interested in just what those three artists were doing, Drake, Bieber, and Reyes. I wanted to look at how they were able to build such strong brands and create such a mixture of genre styles in their music in a way that was unique to other artists before them. And so my industry work is in marketing, communications, and branding. So I wanted to look at what were they doing in the digital space that made them stand out and help them build their career? What brand partnerships did they have? What kind of social media platforms they were using? And when I began to look at what they were doing now, I had to obviously compare it to historically what's been done. And when I dove into the history, I realized my heart was laying with those artists that came before them that never got recognition or is now starting to get the flowers for what they had done for so many years, including artists like Julie Black. She's back in the pop scene, but I feel like what she's done for so many artists before her, that there's still a lack of knowledge in pop culture for what she's done. Maestro, Fresh West, and hip hop. We have Crack of Dawn before them. There's so many bands and so many hip hop and R&B artists that helped pave the way. So the dissertation became more of a split. It was a historical analysis as well as the contemporary side. And then COVID-19 hit, and I had to look at what those artists were doing in specifically in COVID when digital trends were accelerating. So it almost became then three parts.
Yes.
It was a lot of research in one, but I think that I needed to look at that history to see what Bieber, Drake, and Reyes were doing to break into the industry, and then specifically what they did during COVID, because it exemplified what this new generation is doing with social media.
That's so awesome. This is such fascinating stuff. It's really incredible. Also, did you do a lot of research by going to jazz festivals and clubs? And how much fun is that? Like, it wasn't just sitting at your computer, right? It's going out and experiencing it.
So that was one thing I got to say with my colleagues. I'm like, I get to go listen to music videos and attend concerts while you're just reading books.
Right?
And you know what? I loved it. I got to see all three of them in concert. I actually saw Jessie Reyes perform at the Juno Awards. That was a really great experience for me. I was screaming like a fangirl.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And I've seen Justin Bieber. I saw Drake when he was touring with Migos. So that was really cool. But I also did a lot of research in terms of conducting interviews with industry professionals and marketing executives. So I went to the US and I went to Canada. A lot of the research actually happened during COVID, so many of the interviews were virtual. Yes. But my very first one was actually in New York, and then the borders closed. So I snuck one in right before all of the drama happened. So it was really great. But I got to interview 35 professionals while getting to just listen to the music I love.
How did you bridge the gap between academia and fangirling? Because I would fall into the fangirling thing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that is actually very marketable, because people ask me, are you a fangirl of Drake? Are you an academic that likes to explore what he does? And I would say that I'm definitely both on all fronts of all of the artists I've listened to. Maestro Fresh West, I actually got to meet at Canadian Music Week. I took a selfie with him and my parents, actually.
Oh my God.
So everything kind of came full circle, which is really random, but I haven't met Drake, Jessie Reyes, or Justin Bieber. Those are the three I would love to meet one day. But I think my passion for the music definitely shows through in the academic research. But I know when to do the theory side versus just the passionate exploration side. So it's a good mixture of both.
That's so fantastic. So what have you learned, Dr. Pope, about musical artists and how they can deeply affect our society at large?
Well, as somebody that's as I mentioned, a fan and an academic of Canadian R&B, I really believe that artists can help you find and feel and embrace your sense of identity. For example, Nicki Minaj was not part of my studies, but for the first time when I saw her on television with a music video called Pound the Alarm with Trinidadian roots represented on the big screen, I felt a sense of pride that I cannot explain to anybody else. It was something that where I felt like an outsider in my immediate community in Elmira for so long, I finally found something where I could say, that's my culture. Like, I feel so cool that it's represented on TV. So I think that artists can really make you embrace and be passionate and proud of where you come from.
Absolutely. So true. What advice do you have for people who want to take their idea and have it go viral?
I genuinely think if it's a topic you're passionate about and you're able to talk about it on so many different platforms, that's number one, because getting press is great. But if you're not able to translate that into the different audiences or different communities, it can't really go that far. for me, I think it snowballed right before the TEDx talk, actually. So it wasn't even to do with a TEDx, but more so I was able to present this at different conferences across Canada, and that caught the attention of some of these media outlets. But once I did a few of these interviews, it snowballed from there, and I've maintained my appearances on different social media platforms and different outlets. And that's allowed me to now, for example, when Kendrick and Drake had that rap beef that recently came up, NBC reached out to me directly and they said, "You're an expert on Drake. Can we get your opinion on this?" Ugh. That was not with an agent. That was just completely organic. So I think as long as you keep pushing your ideas out there, when the opportunity comes, just seize it.
It's so great. So just going back to your thesis for a moment, you wrote 400 pages about these three music icons. And I'm just thinking that you really learned a lot about Drake, Justin Bieber, and Jessie Reyez. What did you learn about yourself from these artists?
Well, I listened to all three artists in different moments of my life. I actually used a Justin Bieber song for my wedding. It was actually my first dance song. Wow. Because I loved the romance of one of the songs that just like it touched me in a way that I forever hope my relationship can stay in that like blissful happiness that that song evokes for me. Jessie Reyez, I listened to her when I was going through a hard breakup and she gave me that girl power to like get through,
to keep going,
you know, brush myself off and go. And Drake for me, it varies, but my very first vacation with friends, One Dance came on and that was the song of the summer for me. And that was so great. So what I do with these songs, it just connects me to really great moments and just allows me to embrace and seize my emotions in those experiences. So that's what I loved about all three artists.
I love it. You are an incredibly talented, passionate, thought-provoking person. You're a fierce educator. So you wear a lot of hats and you occupy multiple sectors. And now you've added visual artists to your repertoire and recently launched your art website. Can you tell us more about your work as a painter and how your passion for music and a unique blend of your lived experiences, memories, and emotions impacted this journey into the visual realm now, not just writing?
Yeah, so I have always loved art. I actually completed one of my two majors in my undergrad degree was in fine art. So I got more formal training in that sense. But other than that, I was just kind of doing it for fun. And through my undergrad degree, I realized my interest lay with acrylic and oil mediums. And so I'm really interested in kind of mixing acrylic and oil and turning it into large pieces.
Wow.
I started off with smaller, but now I do kind of larger canvases. And what I try to do with those moments where I'm painting, I lock myself in a basement or I do it outside with headphones on. I just blare the music and it's a great way for me to almost meditate in a way, because I'm just relying on just my own thoughts, my own emotions, what I'm experiencing and feeling and reflecting on in that time. And I do it in isolation because I feel like that really allows me to connect with the creative process as well as the music and the emotions I'm dealing with.
So incredible.
Yeah.
You're a real, what do they call it? A multi-hyphenate. You're a real multimedia person. It's amazing. It's really great. And I know you've mentioned before that you're a passionate music lover and listener, but you've also said you can't carry a tune whenever you've been asked to sing. But you're clearly very creative. You have so much grit and strength. Would you say your newest venture of launching your visual art website is satiating a new side to this creativity and fulfilling a newly discovered element to your creative hunger? Like it's adding another layer.
Definitely. But I would say it's been bubbling in with me for a while. I've always loved to be creative, but painting has enabled me to actually express that in a way where it's a more tangible experience and something that I can actually show for that. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm really excited to be able to share, sell my works and have them displayed in different areas so people could connect with me in a new and a different way.
How do people go onto this website to see your work and purchase your work? That's great.
They can go to my website. It's at www.dramarapope.ca/art. So it's www.dramarapope/art. And all of my pieces are there. But what's unique about my artwork is that I don't create prints. It's just one piece. And that's the only original piece I'm going to sell of that specific composition. Because I feel like I don't want to mass produce anything. And especially when I have such an emotional connection to my creative process, I will just sell one off and it's a complete original.
That's fabulous. That's so amazing. To add to this, I've got to tell the listeners, you're also self-publishing, self-illustrating, and authoring a children's book series on media literacy, drawing from your education and passion for teaching, which you've done all over the world. Can you tell us more about your children's book series? how it all came about? And also, will this series be the resource that you never had for the next generation to come?
Definitely. I have a young niece and nephew, and just seeing them grow up through the world of social media has been a very different and illuminating experience for me, because as a kid, I didn't have the internet at the touch of my finger or on a mobile phone. And so one thing I was really passionate about is educating them on the safety of media and also having media literacy and tools to equip them to navigate through that world more safely. Mm-hmm. It's unavoidable. You can't get kids off their phones or off the internet. Right. So a better way for me, I think, is to create tools to enable them to navigate it in a very safe and appropriate way. So for me, I hope to be a mother soon also. Mm-hmm. And I think that having that in the back of my mind and seeing my niece and nephew growing up, this became something I was really passionate about. And I wanted to do something that I could actually take my education and put it to good use. So I think that creating children's books that can be tools for parents as well as kids is kind of a mixture of all of my passions.
That's so fantastic. You're a fascinating person. What was it about Drake's SNL skit that resonated with you so deeply that you wanted to include it in your dissertation?
Well, for just the premise of the dissertation, I thought it was a great opener because it's a comedic satire. It's talking about the stereotypes of a Canadian Torontonian man.
Yes.
And Drake is wearing dreadlocks. He's wearing, he's representing the Black Jamaican immigrants in Canada, but also then wearing a checkered shirt to represent kind of the lumberjack stereotype of a Canadian. And his accent is so strongly Toronto. And we see all the memes, all the videos that come out making fun of the Torontonian accent.
Yes.
So it was a great way to start my public defense on my dissertation because everyone's laughing. You can point to it, but you see the stereotypes and immediately understand what they represent. So they do have power, they do have gravitas, but I think that being able to make fun of some of the stereotypes is just a great way to address ideas of racism or just ways of classifying people that just have become the norm. And being able to do it in a comedic way is a very great way to kind of open up those hard conversations.
Absolutely. Music and comedy are two great ways to get your message across, right? Mm-hmm. There's a question that we ask everybody at the end of the show. And of course, we're going to ask you, what is bliss for Dr. Amara Pope?
What is bliss for me? Bliss, I would say at the moment, is the opportunity to have complete silence with myself, reflect on what's to come, and just embrace the present moment.
I think you've got it together. That's what I'm going to say. That's what I'm going to say. And I think a lot of the listeners would agree with that. What is the best way for people to contact you and connect with you on social media? And again, you can mention your website.
Okay. Yeah. So you can visit my website, www.dramarapope.ca or .com. And my social media handle on every single platform, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, everything. It's just at Dr. Amara Pope. So it's at DRAMARAPOPE.
Awesome.
And happy to chat with you there.
Awesome. And I'm going to also tell you all that go check out Dr. Amara Pope's TEDx talk. I think that's all you have to Google, right? Is TEDx talk,
yes.
Dr. Amara Pope. And you'll see her. She's wearing red and she's on that famous red circle and she's really great at it. It's one of the best I've ever seen. So really congratulations on all of this. I want to thank you so much for being on our show today. It was really delightful and an honor to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Me too. We're going to go on a short commercial break. When we come back, we'll meet R&B soul and pop singer.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Everyone, we are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, AM 740, FM 96.7. And we're now joined by acclaimed R&B and pop singer John Jones. And before we meet him, I just wanted to tell you a little bit more about him. I know all of you know him, but I like when he says It's been a long time, but it always feels good to come home. And Sean Jones is fondly referring to the 90s-inspired R&B music he crafted with the acclaimed boy band NSYNC, rising to fame with chart toppers like Friend of Mine and IEIE. Sean steered the group to a Juno Award after their debut in 2004, transitioning to songwriting and production across all the genres from soft rock to Motown revival. Sean embarked on a solo journey in 2015 with the groundbreaking residency Soul in the City at Toronto's Casa Loma. His weekly showcase featured his original compositions and beloved classics performed by his band, The Righteous Echo, and garnered widespread acclaim. The triumph of Soul in the City caught the eye of WestJet, leading to the collab of the WestJet Boarding Sessions. And this initiative saw Sean reimagining Canadian classics and engaging in intimate interviews with musical icons such as Burton Cummings and Sarah McLachlan and more. Sean's latest album, Weekend Lover, produced by Murray Daigle, revisits his 90s R&B roots with standout tracks like Love Will. He also has a new single out, which we will be hearing later on in this program. With his music resonating globally and a steadfast commitment to uplifting audiences, Sean continues to illuminate everyone through his musical journey. Sean, welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Well, thank you for having me. And that's quite an intro. Thank you.
Well, well deserved. Very, very well deserved. I want to congratulate you on your recent album and your latest single, That Somebody, which we're going to be playing for everyone later on in the show. I was fascinated to read about your musical inspirations in your childhood. I know that your parents played all the classics, The Temptations, Marvin Gaye, Otis Redding, The Supremes. And I know that your music has been influenced by your upbringing. You were born in Etobicoke. When you were 5 years old, you and your family moved to Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And then where you were living in Saudi Arabia, you were exposed to rock music. Then you and your family returned to Canada when you were 11 years old and settled in Mississauga, where you attended Hillside Senior Public and Clarkson Secondary Schools. And you were still listening, I think, at the time to rock and soul music. But I also read that the music of the late 80s and 90s is what sparked your interest in performing. And you also loved the R&B and pop songs that were so infectious and well-written. Can you tell us more about your musical influences, first of all, in those early days?
You know, yeah, like my parents, I listened to the classics for sure. And my parents are both Jamaican. And so there was reggae mixed into that as well. When I went to Saudi Arabia, we were one of maybe three or four other Black families that actually lived on a Canadian compound. And so I was getting all kinds of music. It wasn't just, you know, if I had just been here in Canada, and I found that when I came back, you get into these little cliques, you know, the kids that listen to the soul R&B or the Black kids hang out with the Black kids, white kids hang out with the white kids. It's just, that's just kind of the way it is. And over there, there was kind of none of that. It was like everyone hanging out with everybody. I was listening to Duran Duran. I was listening to Depeche Mode. My sister came back because school only goes up there, only goes up to grade 8, I believe. And so she came back for high school. Yes. And so she would send back hip hop that was happening, whether it was Big Daddy Kane or Kumo D. She would send back Levert. You know, one of the songs I fell in love with was Casanova by the group Levert. And it just stuck in my head. And I was like, wow, this is absolutely amazing. And then we came back to Canada, but I was still listening to like Guns N' Roses. And, you know, the very first album that I ever bought was Whitesnake. For the song, Here I Go Again on My Own. Like, that was it. I went out and bought a guitar and got into music. And I loved that stuff.
Even a cappella, your voice is like crazy good. It's so funny. You just sang an a cappella phrase. And you might as well have been in a recording studio. Like, just, you're so talented.
Oh,
you're
man. I appreciate that. My voice has gone through some definite things, but I'm happy that it's still performing at a decent level, you know?
It's more than that. And I think your journey from your days in the Juno Award-winning 90s R&B group NSYNC to your thriving and successful solo career has reflected a very impressive discography packed with soulful love songs and heartful ballads that have earned you sort of the title, and I quote this, of Toronto's reigning king of the genre. romance and all of that stuff. And you've said that 90s and the 2000s R&B is what you've been embracing these days in your music. And then in your live performances, you're mashing up classic R&B with classic hip hop and delivering completely new renditions of these songs. How would you describe your music and how it's evolved over the years?
Oh, man. You know, it's been exploratory. It's been experimental. And it's been a beautiful thing to be able to actually do that and not be afraid to do that. You know, some people get pigeonholed. And for many parts of my career, you know, you got to do this or you got to do that. And I've always kind of been fighting against that. When I left the group in essence and we broke up, I ended up doing more of like a folk rock soul type thing. Now, soul has always been at the base of everything that I've done, But I wanted to try a little bit of rock and folk and soul. And so I did that. And then I wanted to get into like a crooner type phase and do some like, I was called for at one point the Black Michael Bublé, if you can believe it.
Oh.
And it was nice
description.
And so I was doing like very croonery type stuff. I wrote a song with Ben Mink, an extraordinary Grammy Award winning producer out in Vancouver, called One in a Million. In fact, we did the entire record. And that song is like, people hear that song and they think it's a classic. Like they really do. They're like, who wrote that? And I was like, that's actually one of mine. But it's that kind of thing that just kept me going. And then at some point, I was just like, man, I really just want to go back to like 90s R&B. I really just missed doing that. That truly is where my heart is. That's what inspired me to, you know, obviously to get with the group and do stuff. And so I went back and created an entire pieces of work that created an album. And I ended up putting out that album. It's called Weekend Lover. It's definitely a throwback to the 90s. And this new song that I've put out as well, That Somebody Is, definitely feels like that kind of thing, like that. Almost, it's kind of like an 80s, 90s kind of mashup of just like,
yes,
just a groovy song that you just want to like dance to and sing along to. So, yeah.
It's fabulous. I can't wait to share with our listeners at the end of the show. It's so incredible. But I want to just take you back. So you had this incredible residency at Casa Loma for a number of years. And a lot of great things came out of that experience, which we'll get to in a minute. But how would you describe your time briefly at the magical Casa Loma? Because that was your gig. Like, I'm sad that you're not there because we want you there. Because that was, to me, they were synonymous. Sean Jones and Casa Loma went together. So
yeah, that time, that? I mean, we spent like 8 years there, I believe. And it truly was magical. I mean, the space was perfect. You're performing in the gardens of a castle. You have a glass pavilion for people to sit underneath. And, you know, I had a big band, 9-piece band, and I was just given rein to do whatever. And so I created beautiful medleys of songs that just weave stories in and out. And I was able to go out into the audience and, you know, sing like right in people's laps. Like literally sometimes I sat in people's laps and just sang to them. And at the end of the night, it turned into this just euphoric dance party. But it was more than that. People left there and they would come up to me and just be like, this was the absolute best night that I have had in 20 years, like straight up. Yeah. And they were serious. Some people were crying. Like it was unbelievable. I had people that had just come out of, they were in remission from cancer. They had just finished their last treatment and they're like, thank you. Thank you. You brought back so much. And like, I can't describe it. Like when you realize that you're touching people on that level, it's a whole other thing. I love what I do.
Of course.
But at the end of the day, when I'm gone, I want to be remembered for something more than just, oh, he was a good singer. I want to have touched people's lives. And I know that I have done that over my career. So I feel good.
I have the chills when you say that because it's so true. You always do that as a performer. And you know the line, when you sing, you pray twice. And I think there's just something soulful about you. You just connect with people. And it's just much more than entertainment. It is a soulful heart connection between you and the audience members when you sing. And you're just so good at it. There's something, I don't know, spiritual about it. Can I say that word? I don't know.
Yes.
It's amazing.
And that's what I aim for.
And I think it works beyond. And out of that came another spectacular gig. So, you know, also everything has a season, right? And you did that for a very long time. Like 8 years at a gig is like 100 in Hollywood. Like it's, that's a seriously long time. And you got the WestJet sessions, whereby you reimagine Canadian classics with musical icons such as Burton Cummings, Buffy St. Marie, and Sarah McLachlan, who we love. And I was blown away by your cover of Angel and your wonderful interview with Sarah McLachlan. And I'd like to play an excerpt from your rendition of Angel by Sarah McLachlan, because I think it's so gorgeous. Can you set it up for us? We'll play a little snippet.
Yeah, you know what? That entire experience, the WestJet boarding sessions, was just something unbelievable. Once again, they gave me free rein. They were like, what would you like to do? And I was like, listen, I can create these covers of songs, absolutely. But what would be really great is if I actually got a chance to sit down with the people who actually created these original songs and talk to them and get their perspective and just talk to them about life. And they went for it. And it turned into this entire thing. And the Angel song was really special because Sarah has a school of music in Vancouver. And so I actually got her choir, the kids, are actually singing on that track. We went into the studio, we brought the kids in, and they're singing the chorus. Like, that's what you're hearing on that track. It was so beautiful. And she's there, and she's smiling, and it was just, once again, another moment in the studio where I was like, wow, like that brought me to a whole other level.
Of course. These are the epiphanies, right? Those pinch me moments that you just go, wow, I'm doing this. Like, how incredible is that? And so without further ado, I'd love to just play Sean Jones singing his cover of Angel, inspired by Sarah McLachlan. Let's all have a listen. And maybe empty. Due to international copyright law, podcasts are unable to include music. Music can only be played on the live radio broadcast. Finding Your Bliss airs every Saturday at 1 p.m. If you'd like to hear this artist's music, you can find the link to our Finding Your Bliss SoundCloud in the episode description. Oh my God. And to listen to the rest of it, you got to go onto the YouTube video and listen to more. Sean, your voice is so beautiful. That was actually insane. That is so gorgeous. Must bring back a lot of memories of that time.
Yeah, it does. And like I said, it was just a beautiful, beautiful moment. And thank you to Sarah for allowing me to actually sing that song. We actually had to change one word in the chorus because you're flying on a plane and there was a word in there that wasn't so good on a plane. If you're flying through it, you don't want to hear. So anyways, she actually allowed us to
change. Oh, I know the word. I know.
She actually allowed us to change that one little lyric, which was unbelievable. And I know, like, her version is, it's deep, it's moving, it's sullen. And this version, I felt like it's a little bit inspirational. It's like there's some hope that when you hear this version. And, you know, I was a little worried about how she was going to take it, and she loved it. Like, she loved it. And when she was honored at the Canada Walk of Fame one year, and I actually ended up singing it. And she didn't know that I was going to be there, and I ended up singing it with a choir. And she was just like,
oh,
it was amazing. I gave her a big hug afterwards. Yeah. Like, she's just a special lady. Yeah.
She really is. Well, you're a special guy. And that it is. There's something elevating about that piece that you just did. It's just, it's incredible. You've been doing this for a long time, Sean. And I know there's ups and downs in this business. What drives you so relentlessly and keeps you going in the good and in the difficult times?
I don't know. I think if I was a superhero, I say this often, if I was a superhero, my greatest superpower would be patience. I would be patience man, because somehow I've been given an enormous amount of patience. And for me, it's like, okay, this didn't happen here. Let's just wait it out. Let's just keep on moving and trucking along and working hard. Good things are going to happen. And I've over the years, literally, that has, you know, helped me in so many ways. I've seen so many other artists that just become impatient. And it's very easy to. I mean, man, it takes years. I won't even say it can. It takes years
to
get to where you want to be as an artist, as an entertainer. And sometimes it's just too much. The rejection becomes too much. It's just too many things happening. And I, like I said, I was wired differently. And so I've been very fortunate in that. But if you're asking about what keeps me moving, what keeps me shaking these days, number one, I have a six-year-old beautiful daughter named Savannah Lee Jones, who,
that's so great.
Man, that little girl, she is the reason for my existence at this point. And I am pressing forward on so many different levels to make sure that she has something. My parents left me with so many things. I mean, they're still here, don't get me wrong, but they gave me a solid foundation and are still pouring into me. And I wouldn't be here today without them. And so I want to pour into her and give her an even higher foundation so that she's like able to lift off on an even higher level. That's the number one thing. The second thing is that I've come to a place in my life where I want to open doors for other people, and specifically people of color, because I can't tell you how many times up till this day that they still continue to say, and I mean executives, agents, you name it, continue to say that Black music doesn't sell here in Canada. I kid you not. I can tell you so many stories up until like literally yesterday of this happening. And so for me, it's about pushing forward. How many people can say that they, like I literally did for 8 years, soul and R&B at a castle that was bringing in 1,000 people a night.
Yes.
For 30 years, there has not been a Christmas show, a Black Christmas show that has toured this country. And so with an orchestra. And so I, in 2022, went to Kerner Hall. I literally produced this show myself, paid for everything, and produced a Christmas show called Holiday Soul that almost sold out with Jackie Richardson and Divine Brown and the Toronto Concert Orchestra. And I am planning to do that again this year at Christmas and then take it on the road next year in 2025. I'm going to open the door. I am going to slam it open, and I'm going to leave it there for the other younger artists that still have to come up. Because this is crazy, man. I can't believe we're still talking this way in 2025. So I'm all about the kids. I'm all about the youth. I'm all about moving this, yardstick forward. And that is what keeps me moving.
Oh, I love that. I love that. What a great answer. And it was so unexpected. I didn't expect you to say all of that. And it's amazing. So can you tell us about your latest single, 2024? It's called That Somebody. You say it's a collaboration with a Hungarian producer named Ronnie Breaker. Mm-hmm. Summer vibes to keep you dancing. Yep. You've said that you are with someone now, but back in the day when you hit the club with the boys, this was your attitude. That was your attitude in that song. Can you say more and set up That Somebody for us?
You know what? Ronnie reached out to me through Instagram and he's like, I love your voice. I would love to collaborate. And it took a little while because I was doing a bunch of stuff. He was busy. He finally sent me a bunch of tunes and I wrote to a bunch of them. But this one, I wrote to it, but we never ended up finishing it. And it took about a year and I came back to it and I was like, you know what? I really like this tune. I was like, dude, do you mind if I complete this and just put it out? And he was like, yeah. And yeah, I mean, the description that I gave is perfect. When in essence rolled into a club, at that time, back in the day, we were like,
yes.
We were the crew. We were five good looking guys that were like on TV. We were on the radio. And we would hit the dance floor and everyone would be like, whoa, man, the ladies would just come. And so it was like, yeah, that was the attitude. Like, you don't want me? Oh, you're going to want me. You're going to want me because I am that somebody. I am that somebody.
I am that somebody.
Yep.
Oh, and so I love
That's where, that's the bravado that I used to have. Nowadays, I go to bed at 10 o'clock.
kids will do that, right? Kids will do that too. Yeah. We're going to go on a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to hear Sean Jones and his latest single.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
We are back. This is Finding Your Bliss. And everyone, without further ado, let's hear Sean Jones and his latest single, That Somebody. Oh my God, that was so good. That just makes me want to have an ice pink rosé and just go dancing, sizzling summer romance. Oh my God, that's fabulous.
Thank you.
To listen to the full version of That Somebody, check out Sean Jones on Spotify, Deezer, and Qobuz. You have lots of shows coming up this summer that people can come out to. I know you have a show at Harborfront on August 29th. Can you tell us briefly about that?
It's August 29th at Harborfront. It's on the amphitheater stage, and it has special guests. This is going to be a show, folks. This is going to be a show. It's celebrating 50 years of soul R&B, and it has Grammy-nominated Juno Award winner Glenn Lewis. It has Juno Award winner Divine Brown. It has, I believe Jackie Richardson has received the Order of Ontario or Canada or one of these massive things. Plus, she's a Dora Award winner. So Jackie Richardson. And I've got a young kid out of the UK named Vincent Darby, whose voice is just like, honestly, this show plus, of course. And yeah, and there's me and the band. And we're going to you're going to be hearing medleys like you've never heard before. So,
oh my God, that sounds so good. August 29th, I'm coming. Can I come?
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to say August 29th, everybody, at Harborfront Center, Sean Jones and an unbelievable dream team with him. I can't wait for that. And you also have a show happening just after that at El Macombo on September the 12th. Can you tell us about that?
That's correct. Yes. So I've had a residency at El Macombo since last October, really the first R&B. Once again, the first R&B residency inside of that legendary rock club. Thank you to Mike Chaloux and Danielle Weckerly for allowing me to come in, inviting me inside there and making me feel at home. But we've been doing shows there for quite a while, and September 12th is the next one. It's going to be like a TIFF edition. Not quite sure exactly what we're going to do with that, but it's going to be special as well. And all of these shows, you know, once the show is over, the after party starts. And I've got Bella Sound, who's the best DJ crew in the city. And I've got Steve Fernandez, who's going to be DJing. And I'm telling you, if you want to dance, man, so you're going to get the show and then you're going to get to dance afterwards. You can't go wrong.
I love it. Oh, it sounds so good. We can't wait for that. What is bliss these days for Sean Jones?
Bliss these days. I'll tell you what bliss is. Bliss is, for the first time in a while, actually, first time ever, I did a gig in Mexico in April. And at that gig, I was able to bring my daughter, my partner, and my parents came as well. And we spent the week just enjoying each other, enjoying the warm weather, enjoying the food, just pressing pause on life and enjoying each other. And that is bliss to me. And I long to do that again. In fact, as soon as we left there, I was like, when can we come back and do this again? Like literally, I'm trying to book for next year or someplace and for us to do that all again. It just felt so right, so good to just press pause on life and soak in what really matters. And so, yeah.
That's fabulous. I think you've got it together in a very big way. It's not just your music, it's you too. You're in a beautiful place, and it's wonderful to see. What is the best way for people to contact you, Sean, connect with you on social media, stay in touch with all of your gigs and everything that you've got going on?
SeanJonesMusic.com is where you can find me. On Instagram, I'm Sean Jones Music. On Facebook, I'm My Sean Jones, because Sean Jones Music was taken, obviously. But, you know, SeanJonesMusic.com.
Awesome.
That's where you can really find me.
Best place. I want to thank you so much. It's really been an honor to have you here and to get caught up and to listen to your gorgeous music. And I'm so excited for you. And I can't wait for audiences to come out and see you this summer. It's amazing.
Yeah. No, well, thank
you so much. You're a legend.
I don't know about that, but I just want to say thank you to you and thank you for supporting, you know, music and especially Canadian music. And yeah, thank you so much. And this was a beautiful experience. You're a beautiful spirit. And I just enjoy being around you. So thank you.
Thank you. Ditto. Ditto. That's wonderful. Each week we spotlight a singer, songwriter, or musician, somebody fantastic like Sean Jones. So if you're a singer, please reach out to us. I'm also the Bliss Coach. That means I help you get unstuck, gain clarity, and find your passion and purpose. Reach out to me at findyourbliss.com/coaching. I'm also on Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. And as well, of course, you can always reach us at the Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. I would like to thank our wonderful guests, Dr. Amara Pope and Sean Jones, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kylie, producer Olivia Weatherall, associate producer Olivia Vigiani, audio engineer Juliana Yannis-Yellow, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to find.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.